There's been a lot of really interesting research that basically our understandings and ideas about what could happen moving forward use the same parts of our brain where our memory is stored. So basically, like our capacities to envision alternative futures, which again, in order to prepare for the crazy stuff that's happening these days, have to really not necessarily be informed by what's happened in the past. They're having to remix the areas of our memories in order to understand what could be. But if we've never experienced what hasn't happened yet, we're just going to use our old stuff. So the speculative process, whether you do it through more experiential tools or you do it through reading science fiction or writing your own science fiction or creating world building scenarios, that's creating new memories for us to build more resilient futures.
Hi there, smart community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a fascinating conversation with urbanist and author Johanna Hoffman. Johanna is the founder of the Research and Action Institute Design for Adaptation and works primarily at the nexus of design, planning, fiction, and futures. We talk about what a smart community is for her and what inspired Johanna to write her book, which is called Speculative Futures: Design Approaches to Navigate Change, Foster Resilience, and Co-create the Cities We Need. Johanna tells us how we need to be using our imaginations more in our smart communities and cities work, how we can build our personal and social resilience, and why we need to focus on future possibilities, not just solving current problems. Johanna and I discuss the issue of information overload and interpreting data so that citizens can actually understand it, and the role that memory plays in speculative futures. And we finish our chat talking about the dangers of tech goggles and silver bullet thinking. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Johanna. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm very excited to have this conversation with you. We're talking across the sea, which is exciting. And let's just jump straight in. Can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Yeah. So I'm an urbanist and I work primarily at the nexus of design, planning, fiction, and futures. And a lot of my work is focused on developing tools and mechanisms for working with the pragmatic imagination, which is just another way of saying imagination when it's used to inform concrete actions. So doing that across diverse groups of stakeholders to enhance long-term adaptive capacity in what hopefully are more equitable and effective ways. I used to work as a diver and a coral reef researcher, which got me in touch with the realities of sea level and climate change around 20 years ago. And that really made me want to understand how we could be more proactive and how we address these really huge, complicated, and hard to grasp issues. So I'm pretty obsessed with cultivating more proactive engagement with long-term issues, some of which are climate change and associated uncertainty in urban spaces. So the exploration of tactics and strategies for really enhancing that collaborative capacity in urban planning and policy development, I find fascinating, thrilling, endlessly interesting, and also necessary. So I just wrote a book that's kind of addressing some of those issues, and it's really an extension of those passions. How can we cultivate our natural and inherent imaginations? We all have one, to proactively envision the changes that are headed our way and articulate the ways that we want to respond. So rather than sticking our heads in the sand, how can we look to the future head on and really creatively envision the ones that we would prefer to exist in, rather than thinking that we have to invariably head towards a dystopian demise? It's not guaranteed.
No, that's really interesting. And like, I've been following you on LinkedIn, and I know, you know, one of the key reasons I want to get you to come on the podcast is because it fits so nicely within — nicely is probably not the word, but it has to fit in with smart community concept, right? These are not two separate things. We need to think about the future. We need to think about, you know, climate change and all these big, complex, wicked problems. But we know that there's, you know, new technology, new data, and old technology and old data that can help us to do that. But also we have to open the minds of people, because otherwise, you know, it's not going to get us anywhere. So that human element really needs to be at the forefront when we are having these conversations.
Well, I think there's been kind of a narrow definition of what smart cities and communities can be, where they're really defined as places that are all about using technology. They're usually digital technology in some sort of ways. And for me, I feel like smart cities and communities are spaces that serve and support their residents in resilient ways, and residents that know how to take care of themselves, their communities, and urban spaces in turn. I feel like when we're smart about the places that we live in, we're in a relationship with them. We're not just necessarily depending on a digital device to tell us, you know, when our thermostat needs to be turned down. That can be one way, but the smartness, the intelligence, is also about how we know how to take care of each other. So I think a lot of it comes down to degrees of resilience for me, that resilience meaning infrastructural, economic, and social, and how we create those degrees of resilience. And I found through a lot of my work and my research that that can happen in a pretty powerful way when cities are more collaboratively planned and designed, so that the cities and spaces that we live in are really crafted to reflect the needs and the realities of the people who live within. And that's really part of what inspired me to write this book, Speculative Futures, because it's a really widely employed umbrella term for the array of design approaches that are used to create high visions of what potential realities could become. So science fiction is a form of speculative futures, right? The world building that shapes Marvel films is another. The range of tactics that provocatively explore what the future could become are ways that we can envision what's headed. So regardless of the strategies that we use to do that work, it's about collapsing the distance between tomorrow and today and really creating experiences that can help us reflect on the ramifications of potential change. And in that way, they can be really powerful means of challenging the status quo. And when I think about smart cities and smart communities, I think about doing things differently so that we can be more intelligent about the ways that we build, exist, live in with each other in these urban spaces. And I think in order to do that more intelligently, we have to think beyond the confines of conventional wisdom about what a good place to live is, because, you know, the ways that things are changing so rapidly, whether it's, you know, us living through the last 2 years of COVID, we've been having new experiences that we haven't gone through on a global level, arguably ever. We're going through new periods of political instability that we haven't seen for generations. There's a horrible hurricane that's hitting the United States right now that is arguably much more massive than it would be otherwise because of climatic change making oceans warmer. So like, we're not in a place or a time where the past is a template for what lies ahead. So what are tools that can help us really think beyond, again, the conventional wisdom for what should be or could be or what is safe or what is smart, and think forward so that we can be more proactive in the ways that we create spaces that can help us navigate coming change?
Yeah, I have a few points there. So many great points. I love the idea that we have a relationship with our spaces and, you know, our urban environments or, you know, our physical environments, because I think that is so true. But putting it like that, you kind of humanize it, right? You can have different conversations about that. And then also the resilience piece, it's so important. And we, you know, I've been talking more and more about that on this podcast as well, not just how we bounce back from a disaster, but actually how can we think about predicting or changing or, you know, lessening the severity. And obviously there's so many different variables that go into that. But when you can understand our places more effectively, more efficiently, using the data that we have and potentially collecting more data to, you know, make those decisions, et cetera, but also understanding what people are thinking about that space and why that space over this one, or is this only being used for these, you know, certain things? Could we use it for something else? Could this be the best place to house something that we need in terms of disaster or whatever the case is? But then I also think from a human perspective as well, being more resilient, like we've just gone through, well, we're still going through a pandemic, talking about hurricanes there as well. But then from a people perspective, how do we bring the minds back or back and better? And I think when we feel comfortable and we can like build those relationships with the social aspect, but also with our places and we trust them, then I think we can, you know, build back our minds or bring back our minds in a better way.
I think that's so beautifully put. For me, I think the future explorations that happen with speculative futures tactics are ways of becoming more personally resilient and also more collectively resilient. The personal resilience happens when we envision what the future could be. We become more comfortable with longer term timeframes. As we become more comfortable with longer term timeframes, that can give us a space to challenge, you know, conventional wisdom and current assumptions. And when we do that, we start to augment our senses of personal agency. So even if we don't challenge current assumptions that much, we can start to think through how we might respond to a given event happen, whether it's a natural hazard or losing a job or losing a loved one or going through a health scare. Like, life is full of challenges. And when we proactively envision how we might handle them, we start to augment the agency that we have in order to be like, all right, it might be hard, but here's what I might do. So when that thing actually occurs, we feel a little bit more equipped to handle it. And so that on a personal level is definitely a kind of growing resilience. And when we end up imagining, envisioning, proactively planning for the future together in groups, we can start to augment our social resilience. And there's so many examples of communities who don't necessarily have a lot of economic access or infrastructural stability, where when hazards happen, whether it's a heat wave or another sort of event, social resilience, which is just our connections with other people, basically, our neighbors, how we know them, how we're supported, hopefully, by the institutions that are part of governance systems. When places are more socially resilient, they're able to weather negative occurrences a lot more effectively. So it's not to say that those other factors are not important, infrastructural resilience, different sorts of technological tools for communication, like all of that stuff is hugely critical. And underlying all of it is the importance of our social infrastructure, the resilience and the connections that we have with each other, and the ways that imagining futures together and building those futures into reality is a really powerful way of building that resilience. So again, this book that I wrote, Speculative Future, is all about these tactics that we can use to start to do that together, is really, yeah, kind of a foundation for potentially how we can do that more effectively moving forward.
And I think one of the other things that links in with smart communities, the resilience piece, of course, and, you know, kind of all the things we've discussed, but particularly that doing things differently and the status quo, and that the past is not necessarily a blueprint for the future. I feel like, but we can learn so much from the past, but only if we work out what, you know, what worked and what didn't work and why those things were the case and what different tools do we have now, so then we can ensure that doesn't happen again, or whatever the case is. But also, we've got to really think that our minds have shifted from, because of all the information that we had available as well. And I often think about, you know, smart communities being like, you've got the information you need to make informed decisions. Therefore, you were talking about that personal agency and, you know, building up the level of resilience. So when something does happen, it's not everything's like fallen down because I don't know how to get this information. I don't know where this is. I know I need this, but I've got so many other things on my plate. I can't, you know, spend a day researching what this is or whatever, or going to the government center or whatever, just to stand in line for 3 hours or whatever. And so I think when we've got that information, we know how to get it. We trust the information. That's also really key. Like, because, you know, if we're reading one thing and then, oh, hang on, but I thought it was this, then we can kind of allow us, well, we can, our bodies allow us to then open our minds a bit more too, because we know we can got this level of trust in the information we have, the information we know we can get, or the information we can provide to others as well. And then I think we can build on top of that. And like you said, that needs to feed into all those other key elements of resilience too, as we move forward.
I think those are all really great points. And one of the things that it brings up for me is sometimes when we have a lot of information, it can feel overwhelming, right? So even when we have so much data about energy use rates and predicted trajectories for sea level rise, it can still feel freaky because how do I make sense of it? So obviously, you know, we're developing algorithms to try and, you know, manipulate a lot of that data and extract a lot of findings from them, which is great. And I am like, truly energized thinking about some of the positive trajectories that those can take us towards. And yet I also think that one of the ways of framing smarter communities, more resilient development, is by shifting attitude from what's the problem to what's possible. And I do think that sometimes when we have a lot of data, it can still be like, okay, what did we do wrong in the past so that we can fix it in the future? And when we're focused on kind of a problem-solving attitude, sometimes it just gets us addressing only what the problems are rather than trying to augment things that are working positively. So it's not that problems should be ignored, I think, though, that when we only focus on problems, we end up sometimes creating more problems because the solutions to a problem for one community can be very much not good solutions to another community who still has to work with and operate in that space. So I think one of the aspects of the speculative futures toolsets that I think can be really helpful is by creating the possibility space as an area for different people from different backgrounds, different stakeholders to come together. They may not be experiencing similar challenges, but at least coming together by focusing on a desirable trajectory forward when you work back towards the present moment and then bring in some of the challenges and problems that need to be addressed. That's where at least that unified place of the possibility area in some potential future moving forward can be connected to the problems that exist in the present day. And so it's not just about addressing problems, it's about doing both. Addressing the challenges that need to be addressed using data that's available, but doing it in a way where it's leading towards a trajectory that people want for themselves, and ideally a space of collaboration and consensus about what that possibility space could look like for wider groups.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And at the very beginning there, the overwhelm is a huge thing. And I think the next level of, okay, we've got the information, but actually we want the right information for us to make the decision at the right time. Obviously, that's, we can say that in, you know, we want the right information at the right time. It's easy to say it. It's not necessarily super easy to do it in a practical sense, but that's what we're trying to work towards. But also it's in a language, or it's in that we can actually understand, or the community can understand, your audience can understand, your customers, or et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's a really key one. Like we talk, oh, we've got all this data, whatever. Okay, cool. And well, you can, you know, I just, okay, there's a big cloud of data. Okay, what am I supposed to do with that, right? And that's where I think the magic is going to happen, where we're bringing the arts and the sciences together. We've got the creative people. We've got, you know, the data scientists, but then we've got people that actually can speak the language of the community. Bring that together so you can get that information, and, you know, how you visualize it, how you communicate it is really, really key. So it's not about omitting information or whatever, but it's providing the information that that community or whatever will need as they need it. And again, we still have to live our lives, right? It's not going to be perfect. We'll shift and change. As you said, things go up and down. But where we see that, where I see that smart community kind of elements coming in is tech and data, fine. That's all great. But actually, if you can't communicate with your community or they don't understand what this is, then it's not going to be useful. And I think the level of maturity is going to be when we're able to bring those creatives into the conversation. They feel like they're supposed to be here because they should be. And we need them. We need both the tech and the creative side of things. And I think when we start thinking about the future, people can kind of, and a community of the future, everyone can be part of that conversation, because we can imagine ourselves, like you said, it's like not dragging the problems we have into the future, but okay, what's that vision? What's that thing that we need to do? And then if we want that to happen, what steps do we need to put in place now to shift things that are happening now and potentially happen in the future to that future that we actually want?
Exactly. Yes. And for me, I feel like, to the point, I couldn't agree more with what you say about all the data. How do we actually understand it, right? Like, we've all seen graphs, but like graphs about increasing CO2 levels going up in that hockey stick exponential growth diagram. Like, what does that mean for me, right? Like, what does that mean in terms of how I relate to my friends? Can I go outside? Like, just seeing things in abstract numbers is hard for us to really understand. And I think when we don't understand what it means for our personal lives, it's hard for us to feel really motivated. So that's what I in part love about speculative futures practice and tools. It's about translating data into multi-sensory experiences. What is the world going to smell like when I go outside of my door and CO2 levels are at 500 parts per million, particulate matter levels at that scale? What does that mean? And so when we create experiences, whether it's, you know, creating what that air might actually smell like, or maybe it's a virtual reality experience that shows how I might get to work in a scenario, you know, in 2070, right? When there is maybe more autonomous cars, or maybe, you know, like the political process is such that, you know, I don't necessarily trust my neighbors. Like, let's really create scenarios that we can feel into what this means, not just on an infrastructural level, not just on a regional level, but on a personal level. Because when we feel things personally, we get a lot more motivated to make action, right? It's a lot easier to ignore things, even when they've only happened a few years ago. I was just talking with a friend about what happened I'm based in the San Francisco Bay Area. And 2 years ago, we had so much smoke in the sky from all these fires that were going on that the sky turned orange and it was cold. Like the sun could not reach us. It was freezing in the middle of the day. And it was crazy. Like it literally felt like the freakiest sci-fi Armageddon movie that I'd ever seen. But it was scarier because it was real. And we were talking about it. And a few of our friends have kind of forgot that it happened because it was 2 years ago now. So I think, you know, we have very short memories. And I think that we have that in part just for survival. It's hard to keep on living as a species when traumatic things happen. You got to move on, just like keep going. And at the same time, how can we still remember things that have happened and cultivate memories of what could potentially happen in the future? Because there's been a lot of really interesting research that basically our understandings and ideas about what could happen moving forward use the same parts of our brain where our memory is stored. So basically, like our capacities to envision alternative futures, which again, in order to prepare for the crazy stuff that's happening these days, have to really not necessarily be informed by what's happened in the past. They're having to remix the areas of our memories in order to understand what could be. But if we've never experienced what hasn't happened yet, we're just going to use our old stuff. So the speculative process, whether you do it through more experiential tools or you do it through reading science fiction or writing your own science fiction or creating world building scenarios, that's creating new memories for us to build more resilient futures. And yeah, it's exciting. And it's also a way of, again, translating a lot of that data that people are collecting with different, you know, Internet of Things devices and smart digital technology. It's using that data to transform into motivation that feels personal and can inspire more of us to act, not just on an individual level, but on a collective level as well.
Mm. Yeah, so much to think about there. And I think, thanks for taking us through, I guess, some of the parts of your book. Now, I do want to go to the future. I realize I haven't actually asked you about your book, but we've talked about it, and that's awesome. I mean, that's the best way to have a conversation, right? But keen to just jump in a little bit to your book if you want to add anything else for our audience, and then we'll zoom to the future. So, I mean, obviously your book is in the future. It fits quite nicely. But yeah, anything else you wanted to add, I guess, specifically about your book for the audience?
Yeah, I wrote it about this field of speculative futures to articulate how it can help us navigate change, foster resilience, and really co-create the cities that we need to adapt to 21st century change. And the approaches, I think they're powerful because they aren't exclusive or specialized. They don't depend on getting a degree or buying expensive software. Anyone can employ them because everyone has the capacity to imagine. And I think when more of us feel empowered to envision our preferred futures, we're more equipped to advocate for our needs. And when more of us are promoting the futures that we want to encourage, I think design and planning and development professionals are going to be able to better embrace the role of facilitators and really take in that information to focus less on enacting, you know, their own ideas and more about coalescing diverse viewpoints into cohesive plans. So in that way, I think speculative futures are really powerful tools for us to cultivate self-determination and create cities that really aren't about working for just the few of us, but for all of us. And in order for that to happen, right, we have to challenge systemic power imbalances. Like those aren't going to go away on themselves. But I think when more of us are very clear about the trajectories towards which we want to move and we're able to discuss those futures with others, I think that's where we can really build the collective movements that are necessary to push against systemic and power imbalances and advocate for those communities that serve more of our needs.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll put all the links in the show notes so people can click away and find your book. And it's interesting, I've been having a lot of conversations about resilience on the podcast, as I mentioned, and bringing it back to that personal level is something that I think we don't do enough of. It's like, well, why can't people understand that this new, I don't know, cycle way is going to be amazing for them or whatever? Or why can't we understand if, you know, yeah, like you said, what does it mean if the CO2 levels rise? Like, what does that actually mean for us? And not just, oh, here's some numbers and here's a graph, like you said, but how do I experience that? And that's where I think the arts and, like we were talking about earlier, like I really want to have a smart community art exhibition or something that's experiential, right? So you can go and you can do these things. And like you can actually, like you said, play out those big wicked problems. So then people can you know, I think we underestimate the power of awareness, because then awareness turns into focus, then focus turns into, you know, policy or decision making. And then you back it all up with, you know, the tech and the data, and but also the people that can actually, you know, the skill sets, the all those other things kind of coming together. So I think that, you know, leading on like that awareness is the first part, which sometimes you just go, oh, did that actually do anything? I don't know. But it'll be, you know, you might not necessarily have to be measured that until years later when go, oh, wow, that actually stemmed from this one person or this group of people actually becoming aware of this. And then they're making, you know, decisions along the way. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I also feel too that for me, it's about mechanisms for co-production, which is really just another way of saying collaboratively building spaces together. There was that one project that came out, I'm sure you're familiar with it, with Sidewalk Labs trying to build their development in Toronto, right? And it ended up falling apart in 2020, in large part because Google Sidewalk Labs were not great about community engagement. They weren't as interested as they arguably could or should have been of asking, what do you need, rather than implementing or advocating for their visions of what they wanted. And they used what this one writer who I love called Ben Green calls tech goggles, which I think when we're talking about smart cities can be a really widespread approach. It's like the tech goggles is basically seeing everything through the lens that a new technological innovation will solve stuff. Just give me the new tech, give me the new gadget, and it'll be better. And I think that's a lot of silver bullet dream thinking that has affected humans for a long time, because wicked problems are wicked for a reason. They're really hard to solve. And it's kind of seductive to think that a new tool is going to make it all better. And so I think what the speculative futures processes really bring to it for me is an imagination possibility space, which again is not about ignoring current conditions and existing problems, but it's about letting ourselves imagine, like, what would it look like if the situation was different? Not just that there was a new tool to save us, but like, what does it look like in a larger context? It's political context, it's cultural context, it's infrastructural conditions. Like, it's looking at it as a whole picture. What does that look like? And then let's bring it back to the present moment to think through tactical steps, of which maybe, you know, digital tools are one of them, but it's not going to be the like one savior. It's about contextualizing those tools within the bigger picture that they exist in to think through what might really be useful. And so with Sidewalk Labs and that project in Toronto, Quayside, that never went forward in that iteration, they didn't take the time to ask people, like, what do you need? Rather than saying, like, tech is great, let's just do this. So,
trust us, you know, it'll be whether fine. They had
exactly, and just, you know, have faith that, like, we're not going to use your data in a, you know, unfortunate way, which, given the fact that they're Google, is something that people had, I think, a good reason for asking more questions about. So, when it comes to, you know, co-production collaboration as a goal, speculative futures, by sparking that critical thinking about the present and that imagination of what lies ahead, can really be a space, I think, for, yeah, imagining. And then potentially, if there's enough support and time, because let's face it, like, making things happen is still a challenging process, but that imagination spark is for sure like the necessary first step. So if we can imagine and visualize and come to some sort of a consensus together, that is the initiatory point for creating these changes that really need to happen very fast.
Now, I think we've spoken a lot about the future, and I think future trends and that type of thing. And I think a lot of what we've spoken about really kind of captures that. It's like moving away from just the status quo and moving into the future and using, you know, being able to communicate with the community, but then making it personal and those other things that we were mentioning, like resilience and bringing that all together.
Amen.
Johanna, it's been so great to have you on the podcast. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. I look forward to reading your book as well. I really just have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was so much fun. You can find me on LinkedIn under Johanna Hoffman. I'm on Instagram as well, Johanna E. Hoffman. You can find me at johanna@designforadaptation.com. I run an organization called Design for Adaptation. We do a lot of speculative design and storytelling, mixing that with strategic planning to survey the impacts of potential futures and spur proactive adaptation. So yeah, emailing me there. And then my website is johannahoffman.com.
Amazing. We'll put all the links in the show notes and also link to your book when it comes out as well. But yeah, thanks again for joining me on the podcast.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk soon. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're looking for support in podcast strategy and production, workshop design and facilitation, or communication and media advisory, get in touch. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.